Welcome to the Today's Leader Podcast, the podcast for the leaders and entrepreneurs of today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you.
All right, finish off. Let's go.
Good job, guys.
Hey there, it's Coach Curl here, and welcome to episode 314 of the Today's Leader podcast, the podcast for the leaders and the entrepreneurs of today. Now, it's always good to accept the role of being a student, to approach things with an open mind and be prepared to be challenged. Now, today's episode is exactly that for me. Now, as you know, I'm a believer in simplicity, and that simplicity allows for greater alignment and communication and clarity within your team. And along the journey of this podcast, I've had a number of different experts speak and get interviewed about the concept of innovation. And all of them had, you know, different slants on what innovation is and how it's fostered. So when I think about the concepts of simplicity in innovation, I've got some very key learnings that I've had in relation to that. And again, these are two areas that are tackled in today's podcast, because today we actually talk about complexity and innovation. And in another first, we actually navigate our very first dual interview. So from Innovation Ecosystem, our guests today for the podcast are Jennifer Wild and Dan McClure. Now, Jennifer Wild draws on over 15 years of hands-on experience as a senior manager in humanitarian responses. She's developed strategies for fostering innovation during emergency response in challenging, volatile context, and these are always complex challenges. She's pioneered initiatives that break from conventional innovation models and enable global scale. She excels in bringing together diverse groups from local innovators to international organizations to collaborate on challenging problems and big opportunities. Now, her cohort in Innovation Ecosystem is Dan McClure. Now, Dan specializes in complex systems innovation challenges and acts as a senior innovation strategist for commercial, nonprofit, and governmental organizations. He's authored a number of papers on systems, innovation, methodologies, and agile enterprises. Now, Dan is actively engaged with programs addressing cutting-edge issues such as scaling, localization, and dynamic collaboration building. This work builds on decades of experience as a systems innovation strategist working with global firms in fields spanning international aid, environmental activism, government, finance, retail, media, education, energy, and health. Today, I expect you to be challenged, as I'm incredibly pleased to bring to the Today's Leader podcast Jennifer Wild and Dan McClure.
The podcast is brought to you by Think and Grow Business, the home of the Think and Grow Business Mastermind. If you're serious about growing your business, get serious and join a mastermind group today. Find out more at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au.
And we've got a first today on the Today's Leader podcast. We have our very first dual interview. We've got Jennifer Wild and Dan McClure. They're from a company called Innovation Ecosystems. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
It's great to be here.
Now, this is, as I said, this is a first. So if we cut out and if we talk over each other, please, listeners, bear with us. I'm used to single interviews, so if anything does go wrong, just blame the host, and that'll be myself. So before we get started, let's just share a little bit about the Dan McClure story, and then once Dan's finished, we'll move to Jennifer. So share a little bit about yourself, Dan.
So I've always been fascinated with really big, exciting new things, and my goal was to join the Peace Corps and go off and do those sorts of things in Nepal. It turns out I had an outie belly button, which kept me from going into the Peace Corps. Who would have thought? And
who would have thought?
I ended up in a company that was anything but exciting and revolutionary. But the good news was, 6 months after I got there, they were deregulated, and I had a chance to start reimagining how companies would work. And so it was a really exciting time to be in a place where all the rules were being broken. And that's what I've been doing ever since, is looking at how do you make change when all the rules are going out the window.
Oh, excellent. And Jennifer, you come from a humanitarian background.
I do, and I have an innie belly button, just in case anyone's wondering. I grew up in disaster areas, tsunamis, earthquakes, civil conflicts, a lot of the places you will have heard of in the news, like Iraq, Somalia, Jordan, Syria, etc. So from a different perspective, I've grown up in my career in very volatile contexts, focused on very complex problems, where you can look at things in a very simple way, and if you do, everything goes wrong. So I also have a real interest in kind of leadership through complexity, and how to take views in innovation and changing the rules to create success.
Excellent. And as I said, this will be a bit of a unique situation because I'm a big believer in simplicity, and yet both yourself and Dan embrace the concept of complexity. So share with me innovation in a complex situation. How does that work? Walk me through that.
Jen, maybe South Somalia or South Sudan?
Yeah, sure. So we were recently working on a project in South Sudan, and this project was around how do we support children not to be severely malnutritioned? So significant issue, saving lives. And the first thing that the team there came up with was we just need to track nutrition better. We need to understand where children are malnutritioned so we can support them. We need a piece of technology, and we need to, you know, support these communities to track that and access support where they need it. That sounds like a very simple and correct answer. But when we dive into the kind of complexity around why these children are malnutritioned after kind of cycles of poverty and violence and war, the fact that they move around Sudan significantly, that there are kind of gaps in what the government provide, that there are community beliefs and attitudes which stop children being able to kind of access medical help and others. The ability to just see where the children are malnourished suddenly means actually that doesn't support them to access care. And so being able to really dive into that complex and look at the problem from a governmental level, from the child's perspective, from the community, from the family, from the health clinic, et cetera, you know, there are many different actors involved. And then say, you know, what does different kinds of policy in that country mean? What does different kind of healthcare in that country mean? And look at all of the different parts that actually end up making children malnourished. Then you can look at many kind of different solutions, like just a program that supports mothers to know when their children are malnourished and access care. And actually, that's the program that that the organization moved forward with, and that's shown really great results in research. So rather than kind of these big, great ideas, it's like, well, let's move that healthcare from the clinics down to the mothers so they really have the knowledge and understanding to see what's happening with their children.
So based on that, is there the risk of missing something if we focus on the simple, I suppose, the simple solution? If we're talking about malnutrition, a lot of people just say, well, give them the right food or give them the right education, without necessarily going into some of those layers that you're talking through. So is that the risk that we face in those sorts of situations?
Yeah, certainly. The risk is that sometimes the most obvious solution doesn't take in the complexity of the situation. So we talk about looking through a keyhole. You're kind of seeing one small part of the problem and you think, you know, great, we can just supply food and children will stop being malnourished. But actually the systems in that country that cause that to be very difficult mean that maybe the food won't reach the children. Who's going to pay for the food for the next, you know, 50 to 100 years? What are those kind of differences look like in South Sudan that just mean providing food over the next 100 years won't affect malnutrition? The realities, really, instead of making it a perfect problem.
Yeah, so that's a really good example. Dan, how does that then necessarily walk into an organization? So whether it's a corporate or whether it's a non-for-profit, what's the level of complexity that you need to work? And you made the statement before on air, before we jumped on air, about embracing complexity, and that sent shivers down my spine, to be quite honest. So talk me through that from a corporate or a non-for-profit base. What's the complexity that you love to embrace?
So I think Jen did a really nice job of laying out that complexity in an obviously complex environment. You know, everybody would expect South Sudan to be a difficult place to solve problems. Yeah. But the reality is these bigger, more complex problems are showing up in all sorts of environments.
Yeah.
So if you imagine a traditional business is well positioned to make incremental improvements to its products, its services, and those incremental improvements, you know, maintain its position in the marketplace, perhaps reduce the costs a little bit, improve quality, and they can grow perhaps at a modest rate. And that all works fine in a stable environment, in a stable marketplace. Yeah. But, you know, anybody who's read the news, and certainly anybody who's been through a pandemic over the last year, realizes that there are deeper structural changes happening in almost every industry. You know, when Klaus Schwab talks about the fourth industrial revolution, he's talking about deep changes that really reframe how industries work and how value is created by different businesses. And when you've got that kind of situation, a new mobile app, a new product that just follows the same pattern of every other product won't create the kind of opportunity that you need. Mm. And a lot of time and effort and precious time often can be wasted by people who basically sit there and say, I'm comfortable with this simple, incremental, familiar level of change, rather than saying, my problem is deeper and bigger than this, and I need to be thinking about a more complex solution so that I can really take advantage of this opportunity of disruption that's going on. So it's in the commercial marketplace just as much as it is in the non-profit and public sector areas.
Okay.
I was just going to say, and I think, Tony, you see it in a number of ways and leaders feel it in a number of ways. So certainly, you know, people talk about the shrinking ice cube, or we talk about there's elephants from above that are often squeezing market share, the Amazons, the Apples, the Facebooks moving into new places.
Yeah.
But then there's the piranhas from below kind of eating little bits out of your market share because they're fast moving and able to take on kind of smaller niche products. Or the other way you see it is in the big asteroids. So Zoom or Uber or Airbnb, these transformational shifts in marketplaces where leaders are worried. Sometimes they're seeing their market share shrinking, or sometimes they're watching sectors and markets close to them being taken over by people who are doing that big thinking, who are embracing that complexity.
So anyone looking for a quick fix or a simple solution is probably doing themselves a justice. So walk me through, say, the sustainable results and outcomes that organizations can achieve. And especially, like, I look at the world as really divisive. I look at the world as being really disruptive at the moment. There's a great deal of ambiguity and uncertainty. And many leaders in organizations are looking for a level of certainty to get themselves through this. So walk me through, and I can certainly understand, I'm not going to embrace complexity as yet, Dan, but I can certainly understand the benefits that that can bring to an organization by actually going in and understanding every single scenario. But what about, is it a more sustainable solution for the organization? So what's the selling point for a leader to embrace complexity when it comes to the world in which we live in?
So I think there's two aspects of it. One is fear-based and one is opportunity-based. Yeah. The fear-based side is you've got big problems that if you try simple solutions for, you're not going to make it. You're not going to be successful. The opportunity-based is that complexity creates amazing creative opportunities. So imagine you've got a Lego set. Which Lego set would you rather have? One with five red pieces that are all the same, or the big jumbo Lego set with 1,000 pieces and every piece is different, and you could, you know, put them together in any possible way? Complexity comes with the disadvantage that you've got a lot more pieces to figure out, but also the creative advantage that you've got a big Lego set. And when organizations start embracing this bigger view of the problem, like Jen was talking about with her, you know, malnutrition example, you start being able to see other opportunities. And that's really exciting. And I think our key message is that don't let what complexity feels like to you initially scare you away, because there's ways to make complexity accessible and not simple, but manageable. And so, like, learn the techniques to make complexity your friend rather than run away from it.
I'm shifting, Dan. So you've opened up the world of possibility. You've opened up a bigger Lego set. So I can certainly understand bringing more people into the equation is going to open up more opportunities, more potential, and more promise. So I can certainly see that as an advantage for what it is that you guys bring into the market. So what compelled you to dive into this? And I'll start with Jennifer. What compelled you to dive into the world of innovation and complexity from the humanitarian response side? What was the compelling reason?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there are some challenges and some solutions that are simple, certainly. Yep. But when you start to deal with some of these bigger, complex challenges, like providing water to people in war in a desert, or trying to work out what kind of water filter will be sustainable in a refugee camp in Iraq, or some of these things, then there is no straightforward way through. Then the kind of lean startup principles of let's take it right down and kind of throw spaghetti at a wall and experiment and see what comes off.
Yeah,
it doesn't work anymore. It works for those small problems, like, you know, how do I support these 10 people to gain water? But when you're looking at, you know, a million people in the desert in Somalia, then you need to have bigger approaches, bigger thinking, and a bigger tool set. And it, because the hurdles become bigger, and so you can't kind of get over those hurdles with a new app or a, you know, slightly redesigning a water filter. You need to think about what's a low cost, sustainable way of supporting people long term. And I found it really interesting in kind of moving from big complex problems in the humanitarian space that, you know, I've kind of been beating my head against a wall in finding and building approaches to then coming into the private sector and realizing that they're exactly the same kinds of problems, that this very strong temptation to simplify complex thing leads to that kind of limited scope. It kind of removes the pieces or removes the Lego blocks. It, you know, some of the organizations we deal with are really, you know, the leadership is saying, we need these kinds of big outcomes for people, whether that's, you know, we want to improve their health long term as a gym, or whether it's we want to provide water to people in a desert in Somalia. But these are kind of large scale outcomes that we're starting to see companies deal with. And so when you're dealing with these large scale outcomes, you can't ignore the hard parts. You can't do these small pieces anymore. You need to say, if we're going to get to that outcome, what's it going to take? And that's exciting. That's cool. Mm-hmm. That's the big kind of opportunities that are going to change the world and change industries.
I think that's the thing that I really come back to is the thing that's kept me in this over all the years that I've been working is this is exciting stuff. You know, you are working on something that if you figure it out, it's going to matter. You know, you're going to be able to do something that really feels like a game changer, whether that's reimagining your company, making an impact on climate change, you know, dealing with a community that needs help. All of these are the kinds of problems where complexity lives. And it's fun to work on them. It really is.
I wouldn't even know where to start getting water into the desert. So I absolutely take my hat off to you both, because I can certainly have a much greater awareness of, you know, if we want a long-term resolution that's going to be exciting, change the world, and for the greater good. I can certainly understand that these are problems that aren't easily solved. I mean, the vast majority of the population would just say throw more money at it, but there's not going to be a great deal of outcome if we're just throwing money at it without actually understanding the logistics or what's required to actually deliver a solution.
Yeah, I think that's actually probably the greatest myth. You know, you listen to the debate sometime and it sounds like if we just had a bigger budget, we could fix this problem. And whether that's a public sector problem in a country or an aid problem or even in a commercial enterprise, you know, if I just had more money, then we would be fine. And what it really comes down to is you need to be able to make innovation work. And so it's not enough to have more money. It's also not enough to just have more creativity. You need to have the right kind of creativity. And that's where really this systems innovation, complex innovation comes in.
And I'm sort of applying this in my mind as we go to in 2011 here in Brisbane. We had some floods go through and, you know, the business that I was in was flooded out, and we obviously had a fair deal of pain and trauma going through that. But we also had a number of our team members that were impacted. And I'm just thinking of that concept of money, so to speak. And, you know, the insurance companies largely did the right thing and were quite ready to and willing to fund people who'd lost their house or their houses had to rebuild. But at the end of the day, the money sitting in the bank doesn't solve the solution until you've actually built the solution. So, and I'd imagine and that's just from a person-to-person process in relation to floods, cyclones, hurricanes. The money's there. But the it still doesn't solve anything until the solution has actually been found. Am I thinking about that the right way now, Jennifer?
Yeah. I mean, when people are, it's exactly the same as if people are in emergencies, as if, as the kind of things companies are thinking about, it's about those outcomes. So, you know, a lot of the kind of work I've done, after the Haiti earthquake, people essentially tear up their dreams for the next 10 years. They've lost their house. They've lost their livelihoods. They may have lost family members and certainly people they love. And money's not going to bring that back. You know, life isn't about the money piece. So it's very obvious and clear. Now, people need to eat. You know, kids need to be educated. People need a safe place to live, certainly. But to bring your family well-being, to create new dreams, to create opportunities for the future, you need to think about how do we get there and what do people really need. Yeah. The flip side of that is the companies that succeed these days don't have little dreams. They don't say, we're going to slightly decrease our price by, you know, 1% year on year, and that means we will be, you know, the leaders of the market. They say, how do we connect with what people really need? Whether that's at a, you know, emotional level or a physical level, but how do we connect with, you know, you watch advertisements for banks and it's about families succeeding. You watch advertisements for insurance and it's about healthy, happy people. And these companies know that and their marketing departments know that. How do we give people what they want? How do we provide value? And value isn't in these kind of tiny little plans. It's in the things that we want as humans.
Yeah. I think that's really worth noting that, you know, these things that seem like advertising plays, like we're going to make your family healthy, we're going to make your family happy. Those are actually complex problems or complex opportunities. You know, it's unlikely that a new mobile app is going to make your family happy. You know, it may help you with some, you know, routine small task, but, you know, the companies of the future actually have the opportunity to imagine a new position for themselves where they really can have a bigger role in people's lives. And it's all about this embracing the complexity. And I think the interesting thing then is, how do you do that and not go crazy? And that's a lot of what Jenny and I spend our time on, is just how do you embrace complexity and not have it overwhelm you?
You would need a specific type of leader to work with, I would imagine. So a leader that can see the long-term benefit, that's going to not necessarily be distracted by short-term noise. Is that the type of leader that you would envisage that are the best ones to work with in the age that we see today?
So I think if we're looking for leaders, it's maybe a little bit too easy to say we want somebody who's not distracted by noise, et cetera.
Yeah, okay.
One of the things I find interesting is oftentimes when you talk to the people who are really good at this role of doing systems innovation and being choreographers in this complex space, a lot of them are ADD. And so they are actually engaged by lots of different things, lots of different ideas. So it's not so much focus as it is openness to new ideas and seeing the way things connect. And then I think a lot of it is just coming up with the right practices to go along with that. You know, if you're depending on a heroic leader to get you through the night, that's not going to be easily replicable. And there's practices that you can put in place that would help you get through the night with a perhaps slightly less heroic leader.
So for example, Tony, you said before, you know, I wouldn't even know where to start. What do you do with the kind of complexity? And I think a really nice place to start, a really easy place to start, is actually rather than that kind of 80-20 focus in, stepping back and saying, okay, let's look at the big picture. And this could be the big picture of a problem. This could be the big picture of your organization. But who are the actors involved? How are they connected? What kind of role do they play in this challenge or in our organization? Yeah. What do they do? You know, so we're not going to say we're going to look at mothers aged 31 to 35, our target market, and we're going to, you know, make up personalities for each of these, Jan, Jane, and Jen. We're going to say what does their life look like and what are all of the things they're connected to? And when you start to look at that big picture of your challenge, it actually starts or stokes a really interesting conversation about what impacts different parts, what impacts Jan, Jane, and Jen. what different people are they connected to? What are they buying? But also what kind of policies and thinking and media might affect them, and what are their husbands doing, and what are their kids learning at school? You know, expand. And suddenly you get to see these new opportunities, these kind of green field or blue ocean places where you say, wow, you know, we've never thought of it like that. And there's some clarity that comes with that. It doesn't need to be messy and complex and noisy. There's some insights and clarity that comes from saying, I can see some of that complexity now, and I can see how different things affect each other. And I think it's exciting because you can see the new opportunities. B, it's empowering because you can see new ways forward and new ways to get over some of the challenges you face. But C, it leads to some of that kind of transformational stuff where you don't need to spend years getting into all of the details. You can kind of step back and say, here's a new strategy for something we can really do. And you can find all kinds of leverage points within that, which is, you know, what gets smaller companies trying to compete with some of these larger companies excited, right? Where are those leverage points?
I'm sort of envisaging it's like a cascading flow. So as we start to unearth or dive into what may be the initial problem, that starts to unearth and cascade down into more detail, more depth, different complications, how that impacts on another. So in regards of that, I can certainly, it's almost like a, you know, when you're investigating accidents or incidents within the workplace health and safety aspect, it's not just the initial thing that someone fell off a ladder. It's about really trying to dive into the background, the training, the attitude, you know, the quality of the ladder, the maintenance, and that's when we start to unearth what the real reason why that particular problem occurred. So in your journey, you've obviously had some inspiration to be working in this particular space. And, you know, my listeners and myself can certainly hear the passion, but also the clarity and the calmness around what it is that you talk about. So I really, really love that. But who's inspired you in your leadership journey? We'll start with Jen. Who's been your... And you can't say Dan, all right?
Can I say you? I've many inspirations. I mean, there's this is a big question now. There's people who have inspired me. Like, for example, Richard Branson's a really good example.
That was gonna be mine. How dare you?
All right, I'll change. You can choose Richard Branson. Elon Musk is a really good one. He's a kind of obvious one in some ways, but people talk about his ability to change and transform industries. And, you know, it's not just space, and now it's not just cars, and it's not just financial services, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not just, you know, the Neuralink and the boring company and every kind of thing he turns into gold. He uses these kinds of moving between that detail and that kind of higher level place. We talk about moving between the balcony and the dance floor to be able to say, I'm not going to focus on these incremental improvements. I'm going to radically shift very difficult sectors. And that is inspiring. And, you know, I'm sure there's thousands of articles out there about why he succeeds and his different methods. But without that bigger vision, he would be going nowhere. Without that embrace of complexity and saying, you know, we're just going to build the electric car. We're just going to do it. And it's not just about the electric car, but it's about the charging stations and it's about changing the regulations, et cetera. So I find that really inspirational and as a great motivation to say, you, once you have the kind of capabilities and processes, you can win over and over and over again so that you become the richest man in the world, now the second richest. And so I think that's a kind of clear win. But I see people all over the world, you know, these kind of hustlers. I'm thinking of a friend in Nepal who, after the Nepal earthquake, said, how do I help my people? You know, I'm gonna support reconstruction out in the back of Nepal. And he came up with this great way of kind of creating better construction using drones, except that, of course, drones were, you had to get a permit from the government during a huge emergency. That was just not really going to happen. But he and linked up with some others created or utilized the kind of practice and thinking that these scenarios that would be impossible, people would say, oh, that's just impossible, we're never going to do that, have now created a new type of construction, which is done, you know, essentially through drones and IoT and others, which currently supports over $1 billion worth of kind of low cost housing globally. So watching these people succeed and watching this practice grow motivates me, excites me, inspires me.
Excellent, great answer. Dan, who's inspired you?
So it feels a little bit like a letdown to go with Richard Branson at this point, many ways, because I think the reasons for being inspired by Richard Branson are similar to those of Elon Musk. It's somebody who learned how to think about big systems and learned how to think about big solutions and was able to apply that across multiple contexts. So I think maybe instead I'll talk about sort of an everyman. Jen and I talk about choreographers and the type of personality who is a natural generalist, who sees multiple elements of a problem. So they step back and look at big challenges. They tend to be irreverent when it comes to structure and authority and formal boundaries. So they naturally break across, build bridges. They see a big picture, and as a result, they're able to shape and be the choreographer of multiple of change that goes across multiple areas. And I've seen a lot of these people in different environments where they struggle for years and years because most corporations are not set up to support them. And so even though they see real opportunities to embrace these more complex changes, they're fighting uphill. They don't get to be Elon Musk with $1 billion behind them. They're working every day just to not be fired from their job because they're breaking the rules, they're thinking outside boxes, etc. And so I find those folks really inspiring.
Absolutely. I know a couple of those, Dan. those ones that get really frustrated by constraints and when they've got their best intention to solve issues and problems. So, which sort of leads me to my next question. Is there a problem that can't be solved?
I'm going to vote there are lots of problems that can't be solved the way you might first want to solve them.
Okay.
So
walk through that with some detail.
So there are lots of things that you're never really going to be able to do. If what you want to do is make everybody happy and nobody has any distress in the world, that's never going to happen. Yeah. On the other hand, there are very few systems that can't be improved. And so if you start saying the world is made up of systems, we learn how to make system change, system innovation, then you have a lever to maybe not solve every problem, but to make improvements in places where it might have seemed like improvement was impossible before.
Yeah.
And
Excellent, Jen.
Yeah, maybe I can continue on Dan's lead. And rather than answering your question, it's an interesting way of saying solving a problem, because solving a problem can mean so many different things. But if you say, I'm going to start on a journey to change something in a positive way, then absolutely. And I think that is very akin to complex problems. And, you know, once you've seen that big picture, you can kind of say, okay, you know, this is innovation, it's change. It's often a volatile and changing context itself, the world is today. So, you know, we pick a kind of starting point and we say we're going to evolve and adapt from here. And if you look at evolving and adapting and, you know, kind of iterating on your decisions and making a wiggly line, I think there's very little that you can't attack and deal with and change. And it's that ability to say, you know, it's the unknown unknowns. There's plenty of unknowns in our world, and in leading emergencies, you know, weeks into a huge crisis where you know very little. I used to listen to kind of Donald Rumsfeld and people who deal with incredibly, Dave Snowden, incredibly complex places. And one of my leadership coaches once said, do you know what? If at this point you have 50% of the information, you need to move forward, because you know that in emergencies, the risk of lives, of real people losing their lives, is serious, and you just need to keep making those decisions. And so is said by great business leaders today around market share. You know, if we're waiting till we've got 70% of the information, we've waited too long. So I think when you're looking at that complexity and when you're looking at that picture, saying, I'm comfortable with not knowing everything, and then moving that down to say the higher level complexity, the more transformative you can be, I'm comfortable with knowing much less, and then adapting and course correcting and building that journey out over a period.
And that's really the key thing, is the way we've defined risk in sort of a reductionist 20th century world is, have we planned out all the details so that all the uncertainty is gone? And that ignores another way of managing risk, which is, I'm going to walk out the door, and if there is a gap in the ground, I'm going to walk around it. I'm going to watch and observe and adapt as we go. And, you know, most of us are actually able to cross streets and everything else without having a complete plan of how the traffic is going to come at us, because we look at what the traffic's doing. And that's really a big part of the secret of complexity, is you don't need to know everything to manage the risk. You need to be responsive to what you learn. You need to learn regularly and then have a lot of tools in your kit so that when new things happen, you can have a lot of options available to you.
Part of the, I'm a member of the John Maxwell team, and John says the important thing is to make the decision, and then we manage the decision on a daily basis. So very similar to that, it's about, you know, that context of 50% of the facts or the information that's there, let's make a call, but we're going to continue to manage that call on a day-to-day basis, depending on what's thrown at us. And I think we saw that with COVID, because so many people were looking for that certainty when COVID first came into the world. And, you know, in all honesty, most leaders said, well, I have no certainty, but this is the call for now. That may change in an hour. It may change in half an hour. It may change tomorrow. But this is where we're heading at the moment. And, you know, that level of certainty that people were looking for certainly caused some anxiety, but it also created some great leaders that I've seen in the business space, particularly here in Australia. Some leaders that really were able to provide the level of certainty that they could for their team, but with the proviso that, hey, this is at the moment, we've got to lead in the present, we've got to manage in the present. So talk me through, so just coming to the end of the discussion, this I feel like a real student today, so it's been, thank you very much for that. So for both of you, what's the vision for your organisation, your organisation's innovation ecosystem? So what's the vision for the business? Where do you see it going?
Well, I'll make a first shot at that. Or Jen maybe could. But, you know, go we got it, all the way to the end of the interview before we talked over each other. I think from the way I would represent the challenge is systems innovation, this embrace of complexity, is still a new field. And it's a field that has tremendous potential, tremendous impact in places where it's needed, but it's still emerging. And we see innovation ecosystem as an opportunity to really make an impact on how this field evolves, this whole field of systems innovation and the embrace of complexity, and, you know, make it possible for people to do this. And not view it as something that's, you know, only accessible to a few special ADD type executives.
I would absolutely agree with that, Dan. And I would say, you know, as someone who's spent quite a bit of their time innovating, I want to help others understand and have the insight and the kind of tools to be able to do this. And, you know, when you look at the kind of management speak, you see this is a deep time of change. There's deep threats and opportunities. The world's moving faster than it ever has before. And then you say, and so what? You know, and we speak to a lot of organizations that that are kind of saying, where do I go next? What does this look like? And so how do you support them to then imagine that bigger vision, to support the nuts and bolts of how to do that kind of bigger transformational innovation and those new capabilities? So I really want to be able to support those new kinds of changes and our world to be able to meet the kind of challenges that we have.
Just, I suppose, a question that I've been thinking of as we've been going. In the startup space or in the entrepreneurial space or in the tech space, are you seeing entrepreneurs looking at complexity or looking at technology in the way to solve some of these complex problems, whether they be social, community, or organizational focus? Is there a trend of that starting to occur?
I think there's a big wall that needs to be surmounted. And we built the wall around 2007 when the whole mobile market emerged. It was built on top of the web market. And there was an assumption that you could make small individual technical products that would get you an IPO, that would get you into the market, and that was all you needed to do. And there were an awful lot of innovation processes that were built up around that belief. There's some unlearning that needs to happen there. And instead, there's a need to go back to the Steve Jobs kind of thinking that, you know, the iPhone is an ecosystem. You know, that the opportunities, like we've talked about with Branson and Musk, of there are entire ecosystems to be built here. So, yes, it's really quite possible. You know, what Uber did was reimagine the ecosystem behind taxis. And there are opportunities in every market to do that.
So if someone's listening to this right now and needs to make contact with you guys, how can they do that? How can people connect with you?
Jump on our website, innovationecosystem.com.
Excellent. And there's no YouTube channel. There's
Oh, there's a YouTube. There's all the things.
Okay, awesome.
Twitter, you know, underscore ecosystem. There's a YouTube channel. But the website will take you everywhere.
Excellent, excellent. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with both of you today, Dan and Jennifer. As I said, I felt very much like a student today. It's been awesome. Really enjoyed it. Thank you for your time and thank you for investing in today's leaders.
Thanks very much, Tony, for having us.
It's been great.
Join the group of people impacted by Seriously Simple Stuff to get you unstuck. The first book by Tony Coach Curl. Available at Amazon, Tony's Simple Stuff provides the tool for people to master your life and aspirations. 20% of every book sold supports Carter's cause.
And now, it's time for Tony's 2 cents.
Complexity. Now, that's a thought that does send shivers down my spine. As a leader, making complex processes and making them simple is almost, to me, like an art form. It's definitely a skill set, but it's almost an art form. Taking complex processes and procedures and making them simple to communicate to your team. However, when dealing with problems, understanding the complexity around a problem will ensure you actually deliver the very solution that you need. Because often in business, we see actions taken. You know, whether it's a change program, an innovation program, a solution to deal with an identified problem, we'll often see change initiated, but actually it brings unintended consequences or unforeseen problems. Maybe it's a marketing problem that suddenly causes a logistics issue. Maybe it's a logistics solution that impacts marketing and sales. Maybe it's a system, a problem that was solved with a system that suddenly creates service complexity or problems. And in maybe those times, maybe it's the depth of complexity that wasn't obtained that created the unforeseen or unintended consequence or problem. And this is where complexity or dealing with the complex nature of problems will actually serve you as a leader. Now, our conversations today certainly highlighted that if you truly want to find the best solution, you need to embrace complexity, discover all of the causes and all of the potential impacts. And then maybe, once you've discovered that and strategized a way to solve that, the ability to then take that and communicate it simply to get the buy-in with your team and to be able to work through the plan or the strategy, I think is really, really important. That was a fantastic interview with Dan and Jennifer, and I really do thank them so much for being on the Today's Leader podcast. And once again, if you're looking to connect with them, you will find their details in the show notes. Now is the time for you to take control of your leadership growth in this disruptive world we navigate. Our aim is to help you be the best leader you need to be today by providing you access to global leaders and experts. Now, if you're looking to build leadership skills, better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. Today's Leader is a collective mindset. Being the best leader today, forging greater success tomorrow. The mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business, of course, hosts our Today's Leader Masterminds. Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional and business growth. Book your free 30-minute call today at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. You are standing stronger, braver and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. You know what it is. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.